Welcome to Financial Strides, powered by Woodley Faramanian Portfolio Management. I'm your co-host, Kim.
And I'm your co-host, Emily. Join us for financial conversations that fit your life. Practical, simple, personally paced.
Follow us this way to financial contentment.
Welcome back to Financial Strides, where Kim and Emily finally reveal what it is that they actually do and what an RIA is.
The long-awaited, much-anticipated episode 9, where we finally get around to, what is it again that you do?
Yeah. So wait, what now? So I think I explained a little bit in the last episode, but wanted to just reiterate, we wanted to give you guys some general financial knowledge before we dive in, drive in, and dive.
Yeah.
Fun show. Before we get into details, so you guys can understand now that you know what the different, you know, the various investment vehicles are and all that, we can explain a little bit what we do with those.
Yeah. And I think not only to just give you the definition of what we do as an RIA, but also why is that even important? Why is it important to know what differentiates us from other professionals? What differentiates us from just like a total DIY on the investments?
Right.
Do I even need to have somebody who professionally helps me with this?
Maybe, hopefully.
Well, I would definitely say
I was going to say, I mean, if you're asking us, yes, you do.
Well, and again, I've just reached that age in my life where I recognize expertise and also know that I cannot move on my own.
Right.
I definitely have to hire an expert for that.
Yeah, that's right. We're hiring movers now. We're at that point in our lives.
Yep. Professionals. No one's trying to move a couch, pivot in the stairwell.
No. Roth. Oh, all right. So what are we? What do we do, Kim?
Well, two different questions.
That's true. Sorry. Compound objection. Compound question.
Right. So taking the first part there, an RIA. So Registered Investment Advisor. So that's the acronym right there. And an RIA is a firm, and then an IAR is a representative within that firm.
Right.
So if you just can't get enough of the letters.
It's a lot of acronyms in our world.
Then you can put them in lots of different orders and plug them into the financial industry and you're going to hit a bullseye.
RIA. Yeah, we've hit them all. Yeah.
So Registered Investment Advisor, that addresses what we do as a firm.
Yes.
As a whole. And that registration is with the SEC, which stands for the Securities and Exchange Commission, that regulates our firm at a federal level. And then also registered with the state. So for a firm our size, we're required to register with both. Firms that have a smaller AUM, which stands for assets under management.
More acronyms.
Could just be a state registered advisor. So,
well, let me ask, because and some of you know this, or some of you remember this, some of you don't. Kim is our firm's compliance officer. So registration is a big deal with Kim. When you say that we are registered with, what does that mean? Why do we do it? What does that do for us? What does that do for our clients?
So state registration and federal registration basically holds us accountable to report to those entities how much we have under our management, what types of clients we have, what states our clients are located in, what states we do business in.
Right.
And it feeds directly into the regulatory agencies that oversee our business. So just to really make it basic, just like you would go and get a fishing license,
right?
To be able to fish. And if anybody stops and asks you any questions, you can say, hey, I've got my license. I've applied for this. It's kind of along those lines where it puts us through the paces of disclosing things that are publicly available to all of our clients.
Right.
And when you're selecting an investment advisor, I strongly recommend that you access that information, read that information. I personally love it when people ask me questions about our ADV because I'm like, hooray.
Oh, ADV, another acronym. What is that?
Someone has read it. So the ADV is what we use to actually register with the SEC.
Okay.
So it is a regulatory document that we complete annually unless we have a material update that occurs within that year that would cause us to make an additional amendment. Mm-hmm. But we file that annually. It's published by the end of March every year and kind of does like a end of March for a look back of the prior year.
Okay.
So I'm getting ready to prepare our annual ADV for the year 2025 that will be publicly available and published, everything updated at the end of March of this year.
So that is then to say that we're highly regulated.
Yes.
We're in a highly regulated industry and our firm itself and all legitimate RIAs are regulated.
Correct. If you're at a firm or talking with a financial advisor that is a registered investment advisor and you can't find any regulatory documentation on that individual or that firm, they are not.
Red flag.
Right.
Red flag. Flag on the play. Yes.
Yeah. So, like I said, all of this information is publicly searchable and available. It's basically just a big disclosure document. Mm-hmm. So, and not disclosure in the negative sense that there's something that needs to be disclosed because it's suspect or something like that.
But even just, that is something to be disclosed, that there's nothing to be disclosed.
Right. So it's just series of questions that I answer on behalf of the firm. And again, most of it revolves around, where do you do business? How many employees do you have? How many clients do you have? Mm-hmm. What kind of clients do you have? Because when you're looking at an investment advisor too, you want to make sure that, let's say they have $2 billion assets under management. Mm-hmm. Is that 5 clients?
Right.
Or is that thousands of clients? Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of stuff that the SEC wants to keep tabs on. Mm-hmm. So they understand kind of the makeup of your firm.
How does this kind of information help me as an individual investor?
Well, I guess just more of the information is power, mm-hmm. just so you know and understand what their business is comprised of. You know, I would say maybe a little bit more on the personal opinion side.
Right.
If you have a firm that is relying on 5 clients to make up their entire book of business.
Yeah.
What happens if one of those clients leave? Mm-hmm. What happens if 2 of them leave?
Right. Does that mean that
my investor
is going to be gone?
Right. Their client base is essentially cut in half.
Yeah. Is that sustainable?
Right. Yes. So, and again, if you have a large asset under management figure and you have very few clients, then they're probably ultra high net worth or have a good asset base. So
do you fit in that?
With yourself?
Yeah.
Is that a good fit for me?
Right.
So again, these things aren't necessarily good or bad. Mm-hmm. They're just all to be used as a tool to evaluate, is this investment advisor the right fit for me?
And legitimate.
Correct.
Yeah.
So we have the ADV that we file with the Securities and Exchange Commission. Then we also have what's called like a supplement or a brochure. So that's termed as the ADV-2, and that's also updated annually in conjunction with the ADV-1. It's more of a snapshot of specific things about our firm. It's written in almost essay type form. Mm-hmm. So it's not just a check the box.
Right. So it's portion of the exam that is written, not
fill in. It's like
no matching. The, yeah, no,
for those of you
choice.
Who remember, like this is like the blue book of the ADV, yeah. where you're given a test and you have, you know, that little lined book that you had to fill out.
Yeah.
So that piece can sometimes be more valuable because it's not so numbers focused. It's not so, I'd say it doesn't delve in as much to the nitty gritty detail, but it's written, like I said, in essay paragraph type form. So it's very easily searchable, readable, and the supplement also contains brief bios on the shareholders, owners of our firm, people who act in a certain capacity. So you get information about their licensure, information about any outside business activities or conflicts of interest that they need to disclose, how long they've been with the firm.
If they've gotten in any kind of trouble or right. if they have not gotten in any kind of trouble.
Correct. Or if you have questions or concerns about that individual, mm-hmm. it lists contact information of people that you can call at the firm. And
yeah, direct supervisors, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Who acts in a supervisory capacity for those individuals. Mm-hmm. So that's what the supplement contains. And then there's actually a third part of the ADV too that was introduced not too long ago that, again, is even more condensed version of a Q&A type thing. More condensed than the ADV 2. And it focuses more on conflicts of interest and fee structure. Mm-hmm. So that was something that the SEC most recently kind of started to evaluate, I would say probably in the last 5 years or so.
And when you say fee structure, you're talking about the fees the RIAs charge their clients. Yeah.
Correct. So how are those fees calculated? How are they paid? What type of fee schedule does the RIA use? And again, this is just in an effort to satisfy the cornerstone duty of an RIA, and that is a fiduciary duty to put our clients' interests first.
Right. Okay. So that's a very important part of being an RIA, the fiduciary responsibility. Let's dive into that.
Correct. I mean, because truthfully, mm-hmm. RIAs are governed by the Investment Act of 1940. Mm-hmm. So
1940.
I don't know when you're listening to this podcast, but I can tell you that it's being made in the year of 2026.
Right. So this is old school.
Yeah. We've got a lot of things going on in the investment world mm-hmm. that weren't even thought about when this act was written in 1940. But it's also interesting how one single sentence of saying putting your clients' needs first can really guide you in decision making, yep. regardless of what else is going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, it makes what I do very black and white.
Right.
It's just, is it good for the client? No. Okay. No, we're not going to do that.
Right.
It's funny that way. It really, for me, has always felt very black and white that way. But maybe before we go too much into what, you know, our fiduciary responsibility is to our clients, what does our firm do for our clients?
So I'll kind of look at that as a what do we do and what do we not do? Because mm-hmm. I think that helps delineate.
Right.
Any preconceived notions that somebody might have. Mm-hmm. So I'll tell you what we don't do first.
Okay. I like it. And then narrow it down.
And then we'll just leave like everything else on the table.
Yeah.
So we're not a bank.
Nope.
We do not hold any assets at our firm.
So we're not a custodian.
Yeah. So, I mean, come by, visit, say hello. Sure. Tell us how much you love the podcast, but
right.
don't try to come rob us
yes.
because we don't have any money.
And we don't have access to it either. An important distinction.
Right. Yeah. So we are not a bank. We are not private bankers. We don't pay your bills. No. We don't coordinate any of that from the financial side.
Yeah. So that is to say, just because I like to reiterate this, it's a huge misconception from my seat at the firm. We don't have access to your funds. We put those, we've gone over this a little bit before, but just to reiterate, your assets stay in your name at a custodian like a Charles Schwab, a Fidelity, a Pershing. There are several out there custodians, just to name a few. While we can trade those, and we'll get into the detail of that, we don't have access to them.
Correct.
Like, I can't go into a client's account and wire funds to whoever, wherever, without my client being involved.
Right. Including yourself.
Yes.
So there's that aspect there of every account is distinctly owned by a specific client.
And that does not change.
So there's no commingling of funds to say, oh, you know, Mrs. Jones needs to take $15,000 to go buy a new car. I'll just go ahead and pull this from Mr. Smith's account and we'll just kind of...
Right.
We'll kind of just even everything out at the end of the month.
That is not a thing at all. There's no commingling of funds ever.
So we do not pool
our
clients' assets. You know, that might be something that people have heard thrown around, like, you know,
that's what Madoff did.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So red flags there.
Yeah. Except he was just taking everyone's money.
Yes, he was. But he pooled it all.
He was never giving it to another client to buy a new car. He was just taking all
of it. Yeah, he was taking it. But when other clients were cashing out, anyway, we're getting into Ponzi schemes here. But from my seat, the whole Madoff situation was so hard for me to understand because as an RIA working the way that we do, I was like, how was it even possible that he was able to get away with that? Because the way we're structured, it's not possible.
Correct.
And that is by design. That is for our protection. It is for our client's protection.
Yes.
But so that's why I like to reiterate, the funds stay in your name in an account that is held at a custodian, not by us. Therefore, you're protected. We're protected. Madoff was not doing that. It was all going into an account. Everything was being pooled. And then he was doing whatever it was he was doing with it. So red flags, just for you, big one to look out for is your funds being pooled.
Right. So we don't commingle funds and we don't have control to send those funds anywhere other than to you directly.
Yes. And that can be without the client's permission. And that sometimes can be frustrating for our clients because they're like, hey, we've signed on with you. We trust you. We want to be able to just email or call you and tell you, hey, you know, Aunt Bernice, is that who we just talked about? Did I just make that up?
I think you might have, but okay. I'm interested to see where this goes.
Well, Aunt Bernice, you know, needs some money for whatever. Can you please just ship some over? Here's her account number. Can you please just ship it over to her?
Right.
We can't do that.
Yes.
Can we with some paperwork and your permission? Sure. But until then, no. And you don't want people to be able to do that. Another huge red flag, by the way. So just some tips.
Right. So not going to be able to do anything banking wise without your permission.
Right.
We don't sell life insurance.
We do not.
We will advise you that you should have it, but we don't sell it. We don't sell any products. We can help you compile your tax documents, but we do not do your taxes.
Yeah. And if I may say, I think that just going back to the whole, we don't sell products. I think that's a big benefit to our clients. Personally, we're not constantly shoving products down your throat or encouraging you to buy stuff that you may not even need because we're going to make a commission off of it.
Yeah, there's that inherent conflict of interest there that makes holding true to the fiduciary duty difficult because when you're asking yourself, am I doing this because it's what's best for the client?
Right.
Or am I doing this because it's okay for the client, but it's really best for me?
Right.
Or it's good enough for the client, but I also get a kickback.
Mm-hmm.
And by just completely taking that off the table with selling any products, then there's no question.
Yeah, no gray area there.
Right, about whether or not.
And that's how we've chosen to conduct our business. We want to make sure that we're not beholden to anything or anyone else. and keeping ourselves in check with commissions and whatnot.
Right.
Where it's like, okay, this is, we do this one thing and yes. that's it. And we're not going to be cold calling you, trying to get you to do X, Y, and Z. We have, here's our service, you know, kind of a take it or leave it type situation.
Yeah. And there's no cross selling either.
Right.
So that was going to be my last thing that we're happy to help you shop mortgages.
Right.
Recommend individuals that we have a relationship with, you know, that you have the conversation. We're also not going to give you a mortgage.
Right.
And if you have funds that we advise on, we're not going to cross sell.
Mm-hmm.
So getting to a little bit more of, okay, then what is still left?
So what the heck do you do?
What is still left on the table? So going back to your thought earlier about you have an account at a custodian.
Mm-hmm.
You have that money there. And then you say, okay, I want to invest this money. I want to put it into the market. So that's where we step in. And as a registered investment advisor, we manage those funds.
What does that mean?
So we can say that we're portfolio managers.
Right.
So what we will do is we will build a stock portfolio for you on those funds. Still stays in your name, still stays in the custodian, but we just sit on top of it basically mm-hmm. and place trades.
Yeah.
So
I always call it bringing you under our umbrella.
Yes.
At Custodian X. That's how I always phrase it to clients. Because if you are no longer under our umbrella, that account is still yours, still in your name, and it's still at Custodian X. We're just not overseeing it any longer.
Right. We're not taking action on it.
Or it could have already been there, and then we bring it under our umbrella.
Right.
Too. I mean, it's different scenarios, how clients come to us, but basically that's what we do. And when we say manage the account, and Kim says build a stock portfolio for you, that means we go in, we take these funds, and you have given us discretion, and we will put those funds to work for you in the market with stock X, Y, and Z picked out by our in-house analysts.
Yeah, and that's another difference when you're talking about portfolio management, and there's kind of two different schools of thought there, you know, active management and passive
mm-hmm.
management. So we are active portfolio managers. So when we talk about choosing a stock portfolio, we don't do a lot of bells and whistles.
Yeah.
It's not fancy at our shop. We essentially have two portfolios
mm-hmm.
comprised of 25 to 30 stocks mm-hmm. in each portfolio, and each of them kind of has a different feel to it and a different benefit, but a lot of the criteria is the same mm-hmm. even between the two portfolios. And we have portfolio managers, research analysts that all have various credentials and licenses that meet 3 times a week.
Yeah.
To talk
over all that.
And that's a formal meeting.
And some of them just spend their entire days just researching and analyzing the model as it is, the model as it could be, historical information, outlooks, all that.
Right.
All that business.
What to buy, what to sell.
Spoiler alert, Kim and I are not analysts. So we are not stock pickers for you. We'll get into what we actually do here in a little bit, but we do have those. But I also want to touch on independence as it relates to that, because mm-hmm. we tout independence a lot. Picking stocks, we do that independently, as in we are not beholden. We don't get commissions for picking
right.
mutual fund X, Y, or Z or stock A, B, and C. That's a point of pride for us, is to be totally independent, thereby fulfilling our fiduciary duty in that way as well.
Yeah. And we're independent as a firm too. So we're
right.
not
Completely.
A subsidiary of a custodian. We're right. not owned by a custodian. Mm-hmm. So we don't have anything even in the back of our mind saying, well, you know, since we have this relationship, we have multiple relationships, but as far as custodians go, like, we're really agnostic. It's
yeah.
like we've got custodians that we can work with. If you have a particular custodian, chances are we can figure out a way to work with them.
Right.
And if you're not interested in coming to our
preferreds
or, say, you know,
where we have most of our business,
two primary custodians, yeah, then that's okay.
Yeah.
Because it's not.
Yeah. We don't care where you are.
Right.
We're going to treat you the same regardless.
Yeah. It's not bringing any harm to us as the firm.
And treating you the same is what is best for you.
Right.
Essentially. So those are all really, really important points. So basically now we've gotten as far as what we are, which is a registered investment advisor, highly regulated. And what we do, we take your accounts that are in your name and we invest them for you. Yeah.
Right. And then over and above that, we do retirement planning. Mm-hmm. So again, I think some people think that, oh, you know, I'm in my 30s, you know, I don't need to think about retirement right now. So I guess you could kind of think of it as more of just a long-term planning, just things to make sure that you're on the right track,
right,
with your goals. It can be as simple or as robust as you want it to be. Mm-hmm. And we see that plan change the closer clients get to retirement. Mm-hmm. It all just becomes a lot more real.
Right.
But starts off with setting up a simple budget. Getting a snapshot of your assets.
Our keystone.
And so then we can recommend to say, hey, I see that you have this and this and this. And have you thought about opening up a Roth? Have you thought about opening up an HSA? So we'll plan from that aspect, but we are not planners.
Right.
So right. That.
We're not CFPs, which would be a chartered financial planner.
Certified.
See, I never know when it's chartered and when it's certified. Still learning, kids.
Certified financial planner, which they do more steps in the planning process where like we kind of aggregate data,
right,
and prepare a plan for you with software. Mm-hmm. A financial planner will kind of take additional steps on that we don't as portfolio managers.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but financial planners, then they're the ones that kind of look at your whole picture as far as insurance goes and that kind of thing.
Correct. And can kind of do a little bit more, more crossover there. So we kind of like to think of ourselves as the financial coach for our clients, where we have access to several different players,
right,
on the team. You know, we have you, the client, who's telling us our wishes or your wishes. We have access to your CPA. So we can say, hey, this is my plan. How does it fit in with your plan?
Right.
We have access to your estate attorney, perhaps, and say, how does their long-range estate plan fit into what we're doing here with their portfolio? And sometimes individuals want to have more than one advisor. And we do that too, where we'll even coordinate with another advisor, another peer, and say, this is what we're managing for them on this side.
Yeah.
Let us know what you're doing over here.
Like, here's your equity. Here's their equity exposure over here into what? And
And not because we're trying to take business or get the whole piece of the pie, but we're also happy to work with individuals to say, hey, I want to have some of my assets here. I want to have some of my assets there. And we want to make sure we work together so there's not a lot of overlap. So,
well, and again, fiduciary.
Right. Because we're always
at all times.
Yeah. That's always our North Star. That's always what's guiding us, is what is best for the client. Are we putting the client's best interest first? Right. And you, as the client, are going to be key in telling us what it is that you want. And we need to honor those wishes and not let ourselves get in the way of wanting to take on more than we should. So the other part of the fiduciary duty, and we touched on it a little bit at the beginning, is that transparent fee schedule. And, you know, I know Emily mentioned it with commissions and products and things like that, but that starts to really muddy the waters on fees.
Right.
When you think to yourself, okay, who am I paying? What am I paying for? Mm-hmm. Am I paying for this more than once?
Did they really work on this many hours?
Right.
That kind of thing.
So, and again, you know, we're not attorneys. We don't have an hourly fee structure.
We do not.
And we base our fees entirely on the assets under management for your individual account. And we assess a value to your account at the end of the quarter based on the value that's there.
Right. The custodian really is the one that comes up with the value.
Yeah. So our systems are synced up every day, but the custodian assigns the value. We look at the fee schedule and we prepare the fee. And that's the only number, well, I guess I would say the only two numbers right. that are used. The fee schedule and then the assets under management as of a quarter end.
Right. And I think I've heard this referred to before, and I can't quote it, but here I am going to try anyway. It's called like a win-win-win fee schedule of some kind. Where
I haven't heard that term before.
Something like that, like a triple win or something like that. And again,
if it's not right, I'm not going to correct you.
Okay. So. Well, cool. don't Google it though, because it's probably not right.
But track well, record. If it's not right, maybe we're just, I mean, a win-win-win fee right. schedule sounds great to
well,
me.
Let me so, tell you I why mean, I think it's a win-win-win.
Yeah, I mean, sell it.
Here it goes. So, you know, first one is it's very transparent. You know exactly what you're going to get charged. Then as far as your value, because we charge you on the value of your accounts, we're naturally motivated to make those go up.
Right.
We want you to have more money.
Right.
Because then we get to charge you more. So there's all the, so everyone's winning. You're winning because the value of your account is going up. We're winning because we now get to collect more fees from you based on the fact that your accounts are going up. Does that sound like a win-win-win?
It does to me.
Did I do that? Did I sell it? Did I fool you all into thinking this is a real thing?
We may have just created a new term for ourselves, but I would say even for our fee schedule too, and this is not uncommon with financial advisors, is that we assign breakpoints
yes.
to our fee schedules as well. So the more asset level or the higher the asset level you have with us, mm-hmm. your fee will get incrementally smaller.
Right.
So I guess that could even be the fourth win is that
yeah.
as your account grows, as we do well, mm-hmm. as you do well,
yeah.
then.
So basically what Kim is saying is your first, let's call it your first segment of money that a lower value than the rest. You will pay a little bit higher fee on than funds over and above that.
Right.
So like, let's say you pay 1% on this section, the next section you pay, 75 basis points, 70.75%, if you will.
Yeah. On and it's not uncommon to have that type of tier structure
right.
set up for fees. And so again, everyone does win.
Yeah.
Because when we do well, you do well.
Exactly. When you do well and vice versa. I mean, this is a real scratching each other's backs situation. And now I'm picturing all of our advisors scratching people's backs.
That's weird.
It is so weird. And it's now it won't go away. Anywho. So yeah. So we have advisors, we have analysts. Some of them are one and the same. We don't have a ton of people at our firm. We do well with what we have, I think. Should we get into what Kim and Emily do specifically?
Sure. I mean,
the unsung.
I feel like it would be a bait and switch if we didn't ultimately tell everyone at the end what we also do at the firm. So Emily kind of let off a little bit. For me, I am the compliance officer and I'm also the operating officer of the firm. So I started in operations with the firm in 2009 and did portfolio accounting, or what I thought at the time was portfolio accounting. Now that Emily's on staff, I realized that
you did.
I really don't know that I fully grasped what was going on.
Selling herself short again.
But I started in operations and then moved into a little bit of the compliance role and ended up taking on that role full time, and then now kind of split a little bit between compliance and operating officer with just like some additional duties. Compliance and operations within the firm really go hand in hand. So I make sure that all of our filings are kept up to date. Everybody's minding the rules.
Yeah, Kim is everyone's boss at our, as the compliance. She's the one that keeps us all in line. I mean, not that we're like running around outside of the lines by any means, but she knows all the ins and outs and what have yous of all the SEC rule changes and all that. She keeps up with that. And how she does that, I will never know. And I don't want to know.
So if you learn anything from this podcast, you know that Emily is not coming for my job.
No, she is not. No envy there. So yeah, she does a lot of that. And then I'm going to add to that too, because Kim does everything I do as well. She wears a lot of hats in our firm. So I came on mainly as the portfolio accountant. And for people that would always ask me what the heck is a portfolio accountant, I would always say it sounds fancier than what it is. My youngest at one point thought that I worked at an art gallery because of the word portfolio. It was like the most precious thing I'd ever heard. But no, they're not art portfolios. They are investment portfolios.
Not nearly as exciting. Or
disappointing to hear, but it's basically a bookkeeper for investment portfolios. I mean, it's really not. Debits and credits are, you know, dividends and distributions. It's all kind of related, just a little more niche. So it came on as that, but then, you know, at our firm, we wear a lot of hats. So delved into the the client service role, which I really did not know I was going to love. And I do, because I love our clients so very much. So what does that entail? Just servicing our clients to the best of our ability. I mean, we pride ourselves on our service. Kim does this too. She's incredible at it and an inspiration. I've learned a lot. But yeah, just if a client calls up and needs something, they come to us and we make sure it gets done one way or the other, or guide them to where it can get done or how it can get done. I kind of look at us sometimes because I'm big on my woobies. I always say woobie, like things that make you feel warm and fuzzy and safe. We are that for our clients, I feel, at times. And I ask a lot of people to be that for me. It's kind of nice to give back, pay it forward rather, for our clients. So that's a big portion of what we do is, list the things that Kim and I do for our clients, you can't possibly.
Right.
Because it changes every day. And I am surprised almost every day.
Yeah.
Some of the questions that we get.
I mean, as long as both of us have been at the firm, we're still learning new things, coming across new scenarios.
Right.
And I think that role that Emily and I have kind of grown into, I've kind of termed it as relationship management. Mm-hmm. And so we like to really service the client holistically, where, yes, we're managing the portfolios and we're buying and selling the stock and evaluating when that needs to be done. But more over that, we want to make sure that we have a constant contact and relationship that's formed with the clients.
Yeah.
Because when you're putting your clients' best interests first, it's not transactional. Mm-hmm. It's forming that connection with the clients, really understanding what it is that they want and how we can service them. And again, stepping into that role of a coach to say, hey, we don't necessarily do this at our firm, but I can point you in the direction. I can get you in contact with someone. Let us know how we can help work together with that person. And so that's really what we do at our firm. Really everyone.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Everyone to a certain extent does that.
Yeah.
Every single person.
Regardless of their role, we're constantly developing and nurturing that relationship with our clients because it is very much an industry that's based on trust.
I was going to say, we're asking for a lot of trust. And we ask it very early on. I mean, before the relationship really even gets started, we're asking you to deposit your funds into an account over which we will have discretion and start wheeling and dealing in the market.
Yes.
And so, yeah, we want to make sure we not only show you our appreciation for that trust, but then maintain it throughout the entirety of our hopefully longstanding relationship. So,
and that's what makes, again, that North Star of putting the client's best interests first. That's what makes it almost easy
for us. Sure.
Because when we're making decisions or we're trying to figure out how things fit together, asking ourselves that question always points us in the right direction. So when you're out there in the marketplace and you're thinking that you're at the point where you're ready to have a professional, which it's not a
big first step.
Yeah, it's not a requirement for things. You know, there are things that you can do on your own. It's always nice to have someone who does that for their day in and day out job. And so when you're out there evaluating individuals and firms, we just ask that you take the step to say, do they have a fiduciary duty? And hopefully, you know, through this episode, we've kind of explained what that is and how you'll benefit from it and why it should be important to you. And knowing that there are several different things that you can access that are readily available. You can go to the SEC's website. You can go to FINRA's broker check.
Lots of resources.
It is your nest egg. They are your funds. They are things, you know, assets you've worked hard for to accumulate. So definitely do your due diligence. And I think recognize what'll be a good fit for you. And hopefully we've given you some ideas of some good questions to ask and how to develop that feel when you're with a specific financial advisor or financial advisory firm. First and foremost, you need to make sure that that trust is there, that there's that transparency, like we talked about, of knowing exactly what you're buying into, what you're paying for, how you're being charged, and knowing that the individuals that are working for you are putting your best interest first.
Always. Yeah. What are they motivated by? The last thing that I want to mention that Kim and I are financial advisors themselves. So we have several, obviously, at our firm that is an advisory firm, and Kim and I are two of those. But we have a wonderful group of individuals that all work as a team to make sure our clients are getting what they need to at a very high level.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Proud of that. Anything else I missed about what we do? What do you do? We do.
We're 42 minutes.
Ooh. Okay. We got to wrap this up.
So
we're just real passionate about it. Okay, guys.
Thanks for listening to Financial Strides, powered by Woodley Farah Mannion Portfolio Management. If today's episode sparked questions about your own financial strategy, that curiosity is exactly where good planning begins.
Ooh, I like that. Until next time.
That does it for this episode of Financial Strides. Please check out our website at woodleyfarah.com for more information, resources, and episodes.
If you enjoyed the show, make sure to follow us and leave a comment. We love your feedback.
Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Financial Strides.